ียนประเทศไทยผ่านทรัพย์หรืออะไรอย่างไร
We couldn't have any of our council members present today because we've got the council subcommittee meeting. So the council has apologized.
And then I'm joined with, by my colleague here, Ms. Alice Kuane. And Alice is the corporate services manager at the Shura. She presented this presentation yesterday to the department, so we've agreed that I take care of today so we can both earn our salaries. So Chair, the presentation has got 55 slides, so it's very long. And so the way that I'm going to present it is I'm not going to read each slide. I'm going to use the slides as a guide so that I can tell the story of what the APP is. The mission, vision, etc. Will take as read. The values of the SHRA, of which there are five, were adopted at the end of quite a detailed change management process and adopted by council in November 2017. So they have changed, and there are very important values here, such as the value of accountability and the value of interconnectedness. You will recall that there were some values that perhaps didn't make enough sense in the past, like the value of independence. So with the change management process, trying to get the SHRA to be a healthy organization and trying to get everybody's heads in the right place, this is an important thing, and it is in the new plan. The four major programs of the SHRA have not changed from last year's presentation because we are now entrenching them and deepening them. So the administration program, dealing with all corporate services issues, the regulatory program, which is program number two, the long title is CAR, Compliance, Accreditation and Regulation. That's the regulator being the regulator, that's the SHRA being the regulator. And programs three and four are the two programs that we do through managing the grants that are voted and given to the SHRA. So it's the Sector Development and Transformation Program, which is funded through a 20 million rand grant. And then it's the Project Development and Funding Program, which funds the development of the houses. So the responsibilities of each program, please take as read as it appears in slide number five. And so what I'm saying about that, Chair, and members of the committee, is that the first time you saw us broken down into these four programs was in the 2017-2018 APP. Now we are deepening that because it is what is working and it does make sense. As far as the structure is concerned, we are in a lot better place than we were this time last year, because you remember we had a new structure entirely, which was approved by the former minister in December 2016. But then it wasn't populated. We had a vacancy rate of about 55%. The good news is that the vacancy that we've now been filling that structure in the year that just ended, and we only now have a vacancy rate of less than 16%. The structure, as you see it on the screen, so for example, you've got your core programs on the right-hand side, which are inside the dotted red line, and then you've got your corporate services program on the left, which is inside the dotted black line, which is just structured very sensibly: IT, finance, human resources, legal, and supply chain management, to make sure that the way the SHRA is functioning is healthy and that it's a well-run organization. so that the core programs on the right-hand side, of which there are three, can get on with their job and do their work. The portion of the org chart that's on the right-hand side of that, on the right-hand side of the red dot, red line, are the things that we need then to then project the SHRA to the outside world, which is policy and strategy on the one hand, and communication on the other hand. So, for example, this Tembalihle launch that the minister launched in Tswana yesterday. The people on the right-hand side there do that. The one change in the APP that I need to draw the committee's attention to is we haven't changed the structure design at all, but we have increased the number of warm bodies inside that structure that we are budgeting for. Last year, what was approved was 44 warm bodies, and we've increased that to 51 warm bodies. So we've made provision in the budget for 51 people. The last thing to say on the org chart is the biggest pressure on the SHRA is to make sure that we deliver enough houses within the available time. So the part in the middle there, which is project development and funding, we have beefed up our project management capacity and project management skills. We had already done so in the year that just ended by recruiting two portfolio managers. We are midway through a recruitment process to appoint a further two. These are project managers, contract managers, program managers, development people. The industry is a bit male dominated, so our biggest challenge, because we don't want to appoint another two male program managers, and we specifically try to recruit two women, and we hope to do so within the next month to 2 months. So that's the organizational charge. As far as the budget is concerned, which Alice is going to come back to at the end of the presentation, the three, you see the operational budget, I think, is now matching, although it is lean. The operational budget, which you see in the year planned for, is almost 52 million to carry the organization. The capital budget for next year is 743 million because of the budget cuts that have happened in human settlements and that have affected the SHRA heavily. The budget, which used to be in the old MTF, used to be 1.1 billion. For next year is 743 million. We believe that we will exceed that budget. The year that just ended, we spent 651 million. So this is less than 100 million rand more, while we have the growth trend in expenditure. So the balance of what we will spend next year, because we're busy calculating to submit those cash flows to the department, we anticipate that it'll be in the region of about a billion. And that balance will come from the surplus that has been retained. The two things I just want to point out, Chairperson and members, is the regulatory budget is lean. We've got 10 million for next year, but don't forget that under the MinMAC resolution, we now are responsible for CRU greenfields, and we are also responsible for regularising and bringing into regulation all institutional subsidy funded projects throughout the whole country. So 10 million to create this capacity and bring all of that stock under regulation, we are already anticipating that it's going to place a lot of strain on us. So going forward, we are going to be motivating for an increase in the regulatory budget. The other budget that will be put under pressure is the institutional investment budget, which is 20 million. We spent almost all of it this year. We're very proud of that. We spent almost 100% or 96%. The reason why we're going to find that we're going to start to not have enough there is because there are a lot of institutional subsidy projects around the country. And also when we get to the APP, you see we have to bring CRU under management. And that will require capacity building budget to be in place. So those are the portions of the budget that we are concerned about. This is the progress thus far in unit delivery, except that the 17 there on the final count, the audited count this week, it's not 17%, it's 13%, because some of the completion certificates that were anticipated for the fourth quarter did not come through. There is a second slide, which I also do need to update. So the number of completion certificates that we have thus far are just under 11,600 completion certificates. So the place that we believe that we will end the MTF period at is the planned further completion certificates, which is higher than what's in the APP. What we're hoping to get to is a further 5,400 odd completion certificates in the final year of the MTF period, which will get us to completions that are occupiable and tenantable of 17,000 units. And although we will have more than 27,000 units accredited, the balance will be under construction. So there's already now just over 9,000. The committee can observe that this is the thing that places the SHRA under the greatest pressure, performance against the capital budget and unit completions. There are three primary things that we have to watch very carefully. The first one is bulk. We have sometimes approved projects and then discovered that the availability of bulk is questionable, and that causes a delay. We believe that we've sorted that problem out because we're very careful when we recommend a project now to make sure that the bulk has been confirmed by the local authority. So the remaining two risk areas to this particular performance is the statutory approvals, which is planning approvals, that usually causes delays, and the financing approvals, the actual signing of the loan, which usually creates delays. But I do have to say that the financing approvals have been going much better of late. The National Housing Finance Corporation and the SHRA, I think, have structured quite a good way of formally convening to track loan applications, and so we know exactly where the loan applications are, at which stage they are at in the NHFC, when it is an NHFC loan. The strategic plan was already approved by Parliament in 2017 and has not been amended. We are within that strategic plan period. The next three slides, I'm not going to go into the detail, but just to say that have a look at the strategic objectives, because these are the same. If you look at the strategic orientated outcome goals on the left, it's the same four programs, but then to see what we do from a strategic objective point of view, it's on the right-hand side. So the first two are the corporate objectives, strategic objectives. The next two are policy and communication. The next one, number five, is sector development and transfer, development and transformation. The next one is our regulatory function and our compliance function. And the last one, which has three strategic objectives, is everything that we need to do to deliver the units, the development program. Chairperson, we've decided, because we are, I think, pleased that for the first year now, and now I'm on slide number 14, for the first year now, we have submitted an APP to the letter the way it's supposed to be done in the legislation that created us. So the APP doesn't come just cold as an APP. To get all the detail about what lies underneath the APP, we have this round submitted the Social Housing Investment Plan. We have submitted the Social Housing Regulatory Plan. And we have this round submitted the Social Housing Institutional Investment Plan. And we're very pleased that we've done that, because it gives the real substance so that we can know what we're doing and not just hope. So those three, I know that they are very voluminous documents, but for the members of the committee who would like to dig a bit deeper, the detail of the documents is very important. All three documents have been structured around a regional approach, in other words, provincial nine sections of the nine provinces. We had, as SHRA management said to the committee last year, and I think even the year before, we had said that we believed that the solution to improving the performance of the Shura is to take a regional approach. So that has not just been talk. The actual planning that we've done has brought it down per region, per province. Now, I can't go into, for time's sake, into all the detail for each province. So let me just do a snap of one of the provinces and then just highlight the other eight. So for example, if you take the Eastern Cape, on our planning in the SHIP, as well as the Social Housing Institution Investment Plan, as well as the SHORP, you take the province of the Eastern Cape, we track in the annexes to the APP, the SHIP, SHORP, and the Social Housing Investment Plan, Social Housing Institution Investment Plan. We track where we are as far as unit creation is concerned. How many we have to produce in the MTF, how many we've thus far completed, how many we've signed contracts for, how many are under construction, and how many are remaining. And we track whether there's a variance. So in this particular case, there's a positive variance for the Eastern Cape, because we've approved more than the target. But then these plans go to more detail. So we document the fact that there are 9 accredited social housing institutions in that particular province, of which 3 are fully accredited and 6 are conditionally accredited. We track and we record whether the provincial steering committee is or isn't functioning properly. And in this case, the PSC in the Eastern Cape is meeting regularly and it's working well. So that's good. We track where the restructuring zones are and how many restructuring zones there are and where we can develop the houses legally because the restructuring zones are approved. We try to coordinate with the catalytic projects and we identify when there are catalytic projects in that province, where they are located and whether those catalytic projects are or are not inside a restructuring zone. And then we track how many projects are in the pipeline. So that's just the Eastern Cape. As we then go through it, we're able to see where we've got a problem. So for example, the next one is Free State. Free State has a problem in that, and our plan documents it that they haven't got their restructuring zones approved. So there's an outstanding, they need to finalize the restructuring zones. Also on the catalytic projects in the province, they are not inside the restructuring zones, so when we get the restructuring zone approved, you must make sure that they are approved to accommodate the catalytic projects. Problem number 3 for the Free State, there are no social housing projects in the pipeline. So at a snapshot, with all of our planning, we know what we have to focus our attention on in the Free State. In Gauteng, there are 15 catalytic projects, and there's a strong focus on the purchase of inner city buildings through a request for proposals, which has started. There are 45 projects in the social housing pipeline in the province of Gauteng. In the province of KZN, just by way of highlights, there are 8 catalytic projects, but once again there's a restructuring zone approval challenge that we need to attend to. There are, however, only 2 projects formally registered inside of the Shura pipeline, so we need to find more projects, because if you look at the top right-hand corner, there's a negative variance, not a positive variance. In Limpopo, at a glance, and by the way, this slide is wrong, because Tzanin and Lephalale, the RZs have not been approved. It's only Polokwane. I'm fairly sure of that. I hope I'm not misleading you. But we have a we have project applications in Limpopo where restructuring zones have not been approved. There are 2 catalytic projects, but they're not in restructuring zones, and there are 3 projects in the pipeline. And this is why in Limpopo, one of the things that we did already in February is embarked on stakeholder meetings and stakeholder consultations in that particular province to try to attend to what's in our plan. In Mpumalanga, there's 1 catalytic project, it's not in a restructuring zone, and there's 4 projects in the social housing pipeline, but if you look along the top, we've got a lot of work to do, and that's why this is also one of the other provinces where we focused our stakeholder consultations already last year, which will continue in the new financial year. In Northwest, There are restructuring zones. The slide hasn't captured Manapendlo, but Rustenburg is also in a restructuring zone. Problem is that there are no projects in the pipeline, registered applications for Northwest beyond the two that we've already done, and there are five catalytic projects, but there again we need to approve the restructuring zones. And then in the Northern Cape, two more provinces from the ship. In the Northern Cape, this is one of the provinces where the Provincial Steering Committee is not functioning. So on our work program and in the APP that we're presenting to you, the work that we have to do is support the Northern Cape to make sure that the Provincial Steering Committee starts to meet and starts to function properly. There's only one restructuring zone approved, which is the one in Sorplaki. And while there are projects being packaged, which we are helping them with, they haven't been applied for yet, and they need to come into the pipeline. And then the last one is the Western Cape province, where the PSC is functioning, although the Western Cape hasn't submitted the project applications yet. And as a consequence, only one of the projects is in the Shoah pipeline. The thing that the Western Cape province has gone ahead of, which is going to make it easier to approve projects, is you see there's a very long list of restructuring zones that they applied for. So if we can get the other provinces that haven't put forward all of their restructuring zones yet, to do that, that could benefit the other provinces as well. Then before I move off the ship, the shore, and what we call the sheep, and go then to the APP indicators, which is the last part of the presentation. The focus of the plans is the one thing I want to comment on, and the other thing that I want to comment on is the situational analysis, which is in the social housing regulatory plan as well as in the SHIP. The first one is that the focus of the plans, on all three of the plans, is on the delivery targets. So if you go to all of the plans, that's why Northwest, Northern Cape, Limpopo, and we haven't said Free State, but we should say Free State, where the plans have given specific attention to what to do in those provinces to make sure that units get delivered. So some of the actions which you read on the right-hand column include things like the stakeholder training, funding the facilitation and the packaging of projects, and having restructuring zone workshops to try to help the province along with getting their restructuring zones approved. The stakeholder consultations, as you go from province to province, what you find is that what the role that the SHRA often must play is a facilitation role to make sure that the province, the local authority, and the implementing agent are all on the same page on what they must do in that particular town. And that's what we have found when we've gone on our road shows. The next one as a focus of the plans is on capacitation. And there's a strong emphasis on the creation of chairpersons forum. This is the chairpersons of the nine provincial steering committees, as well as on the creation of a peer learning forum. And this is inside the social housing institutional investment plan. This slide, I think members will find quite interesting, because the other focus of the plans, which is all in the social housing institutional investment plan, is on training. So on the right-hand side there, those courses that you see, which you can just read for yourself, which will take place either once per quarter or twice a year or three times a year, are all directed at trying to get in each of the regions the stakeholders that must make things happen to have information and have knowledge to be able to make things happen. Because very often things look worse from a distance than they are up close. So when we went to Limpopo, the province has got very sensible and very well-structured plans. It's just a case of coordinating things better between the implementing agents, the SRA and the province. We discovered the same thing in Mpumalanga when we met with the province as well as Mbombela municipality as well as the implementing agents. So this part of what we have to do is very important. The next one I want to emphasize strongly, and that is that, you know, we've been asked to give attention to a range of things. One of them is inner city, and another one of them is mining towns. And we've brought inner city strongly into the plan for 2018-2019. We already laid all the groundwork in 2017-2018. So if you look at this slide, we've signed an implementation protocol with the HDA, and we've already implemented that protocol, and we've already run the entire procurement process for 6 inner city buildings, in this case in the city of Johannesburg. So we've added additional indicators into the APP. So for example, we have an entirely new indicator that requires us to have completed the pre-assessment of a minimum of 3,135 inner city buildings. We've got another indicator that requires us to actually accredit and sign contracts for 1,000 inner city buildings in the year that's in front of us that this plan relates to. The next slide, area of focus, is on transformation. And again, on this slide, if you look on the right-hand side, you'll see that we have certain numeric targets, such as 50% of all conditionally and fully accredited SHIs being BBBEE owned or controlled, and a minimum of 60% of the consolidated capital grant being awarded to BBBEE owned and controlled enterprises. What this is silent on is some of the work that we've also been asked to keep an eye on, like, for example, military veterans. So we've already approved a project in Soweto, the TBGI project, where the military veterans are benefiting as applicants. I'm not talking about beneficiaries, not residents, but as part of the application for the grant. They are the grant recipient, or they are a shareholder in the grant recipient. And we're busy working at the pre-pipeline stage with the Raymond Mashaba Foundation in Nelson Mandela Bay for the same reason. When you go to the APP, you'll see that it's split. The next slide talks about it, but I'll come back to it when I get to the scorecard. So we have a unit completion target, and we have a unit tenanted target. So delivered and completed. Okay, so chairperson and members, as far as the situational analysis concerned, to wrap up the ship, shore and the sheep, as far as the situational analysis is concerned, but obviously you'd have to satisfy yourselves by looking at the documents, but I conclude this part of the presentation just by emphasizing that the way we've structured the entire APP along a regional basis, as far as the accreditation of projects, as far as the delivery of projects, and as far as capacitation support for the 9 provinces. So these sub-points, designation of restructuring zones, etc., is what I've covered so far. On the APP, there are new indicators, and I think the best is to group them. So the first 5 indicators, chairperson, are of the APP, which is slide 33, 34, and 35, are all the indicators that deal with the SRA being run as a healthy organization and functioning properly. So indicator 1 is the human resources environment. Indicator 2 is the performance management environment. Indicator 3, which the minister asked us about and asked all the entities about already, is will we get a clean audit? So indicator 3 is the clean audit indicator. Indicator 4 is the management of information indicator, and indicator 5 is the ICT indicator, because we are automating the shroud. Then after that, we have the thinking organization. So the first indicator is the state of the sector report. The state of the sector report for the year that just ended will be available to the committee in May. It's on council's agenda for next week, Wednesday. And the research indicator, which is indicator 3.2. Indicator 3.3 is an indicator to rewrite the norms and standards. This is work that already started in the year that ended, and it's quite important work for anybody who was able to attend the launch of Thembalihle. You will have seen some innovations that make it possible to bring even high-rise blocks in within budget by changing the norms and standards. Indicators 4.1 and 4.2 is all about stakeholder management, which we're giving a lot of attention to because we realize that if all the stakeholders are not on the same page, then the program performance suffers. Indicators 5.1 and 5.2 are about units under regulation, and so the important number that you need to be mindful of is that the target number of social housing units that will be under regulation by the SHRA by the end of the MTF period will be about 34,700 units. And then indicator number 5.3 is our undertaking to make sure that we process all applications for accreditation within 90 days. Indicator 5.4 is the entire compliance environment, and which is a very important indicator because that's what helps us to ensure that we don't have community unhappiness with the quality of the housing management services that get provided by the accredited institutions. And then indicator 5.5 is a very important one, because indicator 5.5 is that when indicator 5.4 tells us that on the ground in a project the SHI is not performing well and that the tenant is not enjoying the best service, or when there's high default rates, or whether the financial sustainability of the institution isn't good, then indicator 5.5 is the indicator that requires us within 60 days to put in place what we call an intervention action plan for that particular social housing institution. And that is to ensure that we do not have, as sometimes does happen, beneficiaries who are unhappy with the quality of the housing management services. Then I move to indicators 5.6 and 5.7 I already touched on earlier in the presentation. It's the transformation indicators. So I go to 5.8 and 5.9. 5.8, what we aim to do, chairperson and members, is accredit a further 9,000 units in the year in front of us. On average, we've been accrediting about 6,000 units a year. And although we are cautioned not to overcommit budgets, we do need to sign more contracts, and we do need to accredit more projects, and we do need to effectively overcommit so that the number of units that we complete and the budget that we spend keeps pace with the allocation. So we only accredited 6,018 new units and contracted them in the year that just ended. We aim to accredit 9,000 in the year that just started. 1,000 of those 9,000 have to be located inside inner city precincts. We also, on indicator 5.10, want to not just be having 13 fully accredited institutions for the rest of the lifespan of the social housing program. So we have a target to increase the number of institutions that are fully accredited with no compliance conditions by 2 institutions per year. So our target for this year is 15 and then 17 and then 19. And these are institutions that therefore have stock and they have no compliance conditions and they are off our worry list. But then indicator 5, and that's a new indicator, so too is 511 and 512, both new indicators. But they're very important new indicators. 511 is the CRU indicator, and that's why I said in the beginning that we are worried about the budget being under squeeze on the capacitation side. 5.11 requires us to at least bring 4 greenfields CRU projects in the country under management, properly regulated, being managed by an accredited SHI or an acceptable implementing agent on behalf of whoever owns the CRU project, whether it's a local authority or a province, so that we don't have to worry about the quality of management, maintenance, and all those things. So CRU has been brought into the plan and brought into the budget. So too has the institutional subsidy program. We have got a long list of institutional subsidy projects that have been funded historically by provincial governments, but where, for example, there are court cases going on in Johannesburg where the residents claim that their building that was funded with institutional subsidy is being hijacked. So we've got an indicator that forces us to bring these institutions like Bukuzake and like Finsbury Court and Everest Court under regulation, a minimum of 4 per year. Some of these indicators are self-explanatory, so we do have the indicators require us to produce the SHIP and the SHORP for next year. So let me move straight to indicator 6.2. On indicator 6.2 is the capacitation indicator, so too is 6.3. So we don't just want to waste National Treasury's money. What these indicators are doing is they say that if we invest sector development and transformation budget, the capacitation budget, at least 80% of the institutions that have compliance findings, that they either retain or improve their accreditation level because of the capacitation intervention. And 6.3, that at least 75% of institutions where there is project packaging support given to the institution, that they succeed to get a capital grant contract as a result of the intervention. Then moving towards the last part of the indicators on the APP, this slide here shows you what I had mentioning what I had mentioned earlier about separating having one target for number of units that we complete, which is 4,820 this year, and having a separate target for number of units tenanted, where there is a lag, so it's 3,856 in the next year. So what these targets will guard us against is having completed units where the SHI doesn't get occupancy certificates and physically tenant the units within an acceptable period of time. We, though, are trying to exceed the target of 4820, and I did say earlier in the presentation that the number that we are shooting for is 5,600. To make sure that future years look good, we've got a target of 6,270 units that we aim to put through pre-accreditation, and those will contribute towards the 9,000 that get eventually accredited. I've presented the inner city target. This is the 3135 is not accredited but assessed. The expenditure target is self-explanatory. And then the last two slides, the last two sets of indicators before I ask before the CSM gives us the budget breakdown, is 20%, and we are 20% of all the grant that we award going to emerging other delivery agents, which are not accredited SHIs, they're entrepreneurs and they're new businesses, and they're private businesses. And the last one is the 60% target for Triple BEE, which is in the which is in the ABP.
Chairperson, members and colleagues, I'll just deal with the last two slides. On the first one, I just want to emphasize, Chairperson, that we haven't looked at the totality of the income, but we just looked at the approved allocation to the SHRA. We have already spoken about the baseline that has decreased over the outer 3 years. And the CEO has actually touched on this slide. Maybe I should just go to the next slide. Chairperson, what I want to bring to your attention is that earlier on the CEO spoke to the organogram, and it's indicated here that during 2017-2018, our compensation was 27 million, and it has actually jumped to 34 million. Chairperson, that actually emphasizes the fact that we are more service-driven and we need to offer project management services and compliance monitoring services. The other key spike is under consultants. It has jumped from 3.7 to 7.9, reason being that in the current financial year, we are performing tenant audits in all the social housing units with the aim of establishing that the tenants currently in those units are the actual target market, whether their income is still between 1,515 per month. And that will give us then an indication of whether people are using social housing for transitional or permanent residence, and be able to report them to the portfolio committee. Chairperson, coupled with that is the lease payments. The lease payments is also increased from 2.7 to 3.5, and that is informed by the number of staff members that has increased from prior years. So we needed to relocate and get bigger offices to accommodate the number of grown staff members. Chairperson, the next one is research and development. Research and development, Chairperson, has been housed under capacitation grants in the past, so now we want to bring it out so that we can see what is it that we're doing. The focus, Chairperson, on research and development is to look at issues like the norms and standards and the impact of social housing to the community, so that we are able to measure how beneficial social housing is, and also to measure the temperature of the sector itself and come up with strategies on how we best transform the social housing sector. Then Chairperson, what I've also talked to is other services. Other services mainly are operating expenses in the SHRA. They cover issues like your training, the travel within the operating support unit, your printing stationery, and so forth that couldn't then be listed here for purposes of the presentation. And Chairperson, we anticipate that we are going to spend all the capital allocation over the years, and we shouldn't actually be experiencing any surplus or deficit. So in that end, we want to then adopt proper multi-year projection for the outer years. Thank you, Chair.
You're done. Thank you very much for that presentation from Social Housing Regulatory Authority.
I know it's been a long presentation. Came at the wrong time, after lunch, honorable. But I know you've done well in this circumstance. Questions and clarities, honorable member? Questions and clarities? Let me start with you, honorable Khurai, followed by honorable Malatri, followed by honorable Tole, followed by
No, thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Khurai covered the first part of my question, which was relating to the zeros on the provinces. So I just have one question. With regard to your expected delivery from current projects, I mean, when you do your summation there, you indicate that you will probably fall short of the MTSF target. Given the current delivery trends, despite you know the number of those that have been approved for grant awarding in there, so I just want to get a sense with regard to that. Does that relate to the performance in the provinces, which Honorable Khurai is referring to? Because it affects the sum total of that. And lastly, I mean, just educate me on this, because on your financial breakdown in there, you highlighted the fact that your spending on consultants is in fact tripling because of the scope of work that you're doing. I needed to get like more, you know, an explanation around there to say that
Is that the only way that you can carry out that function through the use of consultants? Looking also at the fact that, you know, as a growing organization, obviously your size increases, and that is also reflected in terms of your spending on leases. But, you know, is that the only way that, that you're going to look at fulfilling that function with the use of consultants, or also looking at, you know, programs involving internships on and staff expansion, just so that your cost control measures are manageable over a financial period? Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay. Does not want God. my first thing I want to understand is the time frame for CRU Greenfield. If you can just tell us, do you have a time frame or is it just in on a pipeline? And the other one, Jefferson, is that one of if they can give us some breakdown on the municipality, especially the goodwill counting. Because if you check there, they have city of Johannesburg, city of Tswane, Uleni, Mukale, city of Rafong, and Fontaine. If they can give us the breakdown of this development that happened in this area. The shadows have been developed in this area. And that is what Jefferson, which is the last one, is there. Do they have the system in place or mechanism that help those provinces that are not, that they don't have pipeline projects? Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for those questions of clarity. Just a few. I know I've raised those questions before. I just probably need more clarity and progress made from the time that I've raised them. On the issue of the SHI, which is your social housing institute, the last time we had this interaction with you, CEO, we raised the concern that majority of them are still from the previously advantaged. How have we moved into making sure that now we've got more of these SHIs that comes from the previously disadvantaged across the board? Remember, when we raised this thing, we were even raising the concern that in some provinces, there's only one or two accredited. And in a vast province, and these one or two accredited are still those that are the advantage. So if you can probably clarify for me how we have moved on that issue. The second part is that I'm not sure, probably I'm dreaming. Your capital grants in the last financial year, I heard you said you spent about 651 million in the last financial year. 651 million of how much? I seem to think that when you came to present here, you talked about 1.6 billion. Or am I dreaming it? So if you spent 651 million, is it 651 million of 1.6 billion? I'm asking the question. I'm not certain about it, but I just seem to think that's what you said when you were here. And if that is the case, that question is being linked to the fact that as you present, you keep on saying there's been a cut in this financial year of what you've been allocated. And yet, if I'm correct, you have not even exhausted what you have been given in the last financial year. Maybe if you can clarify that. So that I have an understanding. I think what I remember, they've raised the issue of the provinces where there is no pipeline project. And I think that question should be contextualized in the fact that everybody now knows that we have agreed as this sector that social housing is one way that we should popularize and the way to go. So if you are going to have provinces that don't have pipeline project, and yet we are saying we should go the social housing route, what then are we saying? Are we saying then that in those provinces, that it's not that important that we do this. And maybe the question is, that has been asked by the members, how then are we assisting those provinces that do not have the pipeline project of the offshore? Coupled with that question is that there is a continuous comment that says the provincial steering committees are not functioning well in some provinces. Whose responsibility is it to make sure that these provincial steering committees function well? And if the comment is going to be saying not functioning well in Northwest, not functioning well in Limpopo, but we are not told what is it that you are doing to make sure that they actually function well. So if we can have that clarity to understand who is supposed to make sure that they function well. Is it me or my perception that social housing seems to have its bigger footprint in Gauteng? If you listen to the report, you've got 45 projects in the pipeline, when in other provinces you've got one, you've got two. There's very few that you even have more than five. But in Gauteng alone, you've got 45. Is it because it is easier to work in Gauteng because that's where you are, and you do not really want to go to other areas? Maybe that's so that we have an understanding. 45. That's almost covering all other provinces that we don't have. Is that why there's no pipeline there in the other provinces? Because you've given back in Gauteng so that we actually have that understanding. The inner city buildings that you're talking about, just for us and our own comfort, I know that you're doing a lot of work in Joburg. Can we have the comfort in this committee that in the area where there was an accident last week, you're not necessarily there yet. You're not working there, so you're not necessarily part of that block. And that asking that it's just confirmed at this point. Remember, we have an area there where there's old buildings that we have heard about three kids that passed away, that a building fell on them. So I'm just asking the question. If SHRA is not necessarily working there yet, so or not about to have footprint, so that we have an understanding where you are. And therefore, I hope you understand my question. And there's a complaint that has come to my office, but we have not had the opportunity, but I'm just asking. This question I'm asking it in general is how you manage the your social housing building. There's a complaint of some people that have been evicted in I might just have forgotten the building's name. And they have been sitting outside for almost now 6 months to a year. And my question is just about the management. How do you manage? Because remember, when those people get into your building, they've been assessed on how much they earn. As you say, you are going to do that now. So what probably was the process? And how do you deal with that? And how do you interface with a particular metro that your building is in terms of managing those kinds of situations? Because those people are now making that a Thekwini metro issue. And people there think that Thekwini is not managing the issue, and yet Thekwini has got nothing to do with that building. So maybe we just need to that clarity on how you interface with the metros in terms of your buildings and probably end a province. And yeah, I think for me that's about it. The members have raised all the important questions. But there's one question that I want to ask. Your relationship with NHS. Because I think you when you were presenting, you raised the subject. Because my understanding is that your project gets the top-up funding comes from NHFC somehow. But how is your relationship? Because I know that there's been problems about that relationship, and maybe just explain to us how you're dealing with it and how is it being managed. And you're talking about the restructuring zones that other areas don't have, others are about to put those applications. I know this, we've raised it sometime last year, the gap that is taken in actually submitting this to the minister, because ultimately the minister must sign them off. And you find that probably 2 years lapses before you have any of these funds being submitted to the minister, and therefore delaying the whole process of your work. And my question is, how are you monitoring to make sure that these areas that you have identified that they are supposed to submit, they submit on time, so that at least we've got projects running all the time. We don't have a gap in between. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. The expenditure up until the end of March 2017 on the Institutional Investment Grant, the Sector Development and Transformation Grant, was 95.6, yeah. So we had to spend a minimum of 95%. It's a good performance compared to prior years.
What did you say?
It has increased dramatically from 1 year to the next, so we hope that we can keep the trend up. The Limpopo story, and by the way, the...
can you tell us that 95%, how much was it?
It was almost 20 million. It was, yeah, 19 million some change.
Sure.
Okay, the Limpopo story, so applications haven't been coming in from Limpopo. There is an accredited social housing institution in the province called the Polokwane Housing Association. And the restructuring zones are in Polokwane. And that applicant has had some difficulty, has got a project with a very high default rate, and they've been getting on their feet. The primary delivery vehicle in the province for affordable rental housing has been the CRU program. So they have been producing CRU units, but not social housing units. We think this will change now because Greenfield CRU has been brought under social housing, and our stakeholder consultations in the province have been very valuable and been very helpful, and we're working very closely with provincial government. We have two projects, both Polokwane projects, that are in front of our technical evaluation committee. We've looked at them. They're fundable. The transaction advisors have been sent back to the drawing board on the costs, because the units are too expensive. As soon as they have configured their specifications to bring it within cost. So they were making some basic errors, like the units were too big and it was pushing the cost up. The units were a lot bigger than your conventional norms and standards. So we anticipate that sometime during the course of the first quarter, we're going to bring those two projects back to the TEC. And although I can't preempt the TEC, I would anticipate that there's a strong likelihood that those two Polokwane projects would be approved. The other thing that will, why no delivery in Polokwane, is the restructuring zones. So the other zones need to be approved. so that we can, the province has got plans for projects in various different parts of the province, not only Polokwane, but the zones have to be approved. And that's something that we are trying to coordinate with them. As far as the timeline of the pipeline is concerned, we're not really satisfied yet, because if you look at our pipeline, the projects that are in our pipeline that come from social housing institutions, on average they have been in our pipeline for 242 days. And the projects from ODA that are in our pipeline, they have been in our pipeline on average for 220 days. We would like to be able to turn around a project application within 90 days. That's what our standard operating procedures say. But very often we don't manage to turn it around in 90 days and award the grant, because we find that the application doesn't meet all the minimum investment criteria. So we are making a recommendation to our council to allow us to upfront fund some of the project packaging, which would move things quicker. Because things do, the timeline in the pipeline and how long they are in the pipeline is longer than we want it to be. And then you asked, the member asked about KZN. Okay, on KZN, the challenge that I was referring to was the fact that they have a deficit. They're heading to miss the target that they have to produce of 3,085 units. They're heading to miss it potentially by 483. And they only have two projects in the pipeline. So for example, Bridge City is not yet in our pipeline, although we know we are anticipating Bridge City. And other of the priority projects in the province, we know that we are anticipating them, including a project in Newcastle, which recently had a restructuring zone approved. But the challenge I was referring to was just that we needed to have more in the pipeline from the province, so that now that the existing projects in the province are winding down and winding to completion, Hamptons, Hillside, Msunduzi, that new projects come up as those get completed. That was the challenge that I was referring to. Yes, the question was whether expected delivery will fall short of the target. Does this relate to the performance of the provinces? Sometimes it does. And sometimes it relates to the performance of the implementing agent. Sometimes it also relates to planning approvals, which is obviously a local authority issue. So it's normally the solution lies in coordinating very well between the implementing agent, the province, and the local authority. But in reality, if I was to answer the question fairly, in the beginning of the NTEF period, we did lose time, and we started off very slow in the beginning of the NTEF period. So the reason why we will fall short on a practical completion on completed units is really because we will run out of time. It isn't because we don't have the projects approved. We've got the projects approved. We've got the contract signed. But time will run out because we won't be able to produce the balance all the way to 27,000 units before the end of March 2019. They will be in production. The good news though, and I was presenting some of the data on Monday, and I've pointed out that from an expenditure point of view, even though the budgets have been cut, the budgets that have been drawn down by the SHRA have increased for the last 3 years. They increased by 340%, and then by 201%, and the expenditure increased by 157% and then 147%. So it's an improvement, but it's not something that the rest of the 27,000 units can all be completed by the time expires. And that's the reason for that. The CSM, I'm going to ask the CSM to attend to the consultant's question, and then member Sitole, the CRU Greenfields time frame, it doesn't have a time frame as such. What it has, it's already an expectation because it's already a MIDMAC resolution from the 9th of June last year, where any new Greenfields CRU is already funded through the social housing program. So it wouldn't be a standalone CRU project. It would be a social housing project which accommodates beneficiaries earning less than 3.5, as well as beneficiaries earning more than 3.5 up to 15. The part that maybe Member Sitole was asking about is how long will it take us to get all of the CRU projects under regulation by the SHRA? It's too early for me to answer that question because it's going to differ from one province to another and one local authority to another. In some cases, the local authority has already put management arrangements in place to manage the project. And that will go quicker because we just regularize that. But in other cases where that's not the case, it will take longer. So I would rather formulate the full plan based on all of the CRU projects than just guess how long it will take us. Okay, in the province of Gauteng, it's very true, and if I may, Chair, because you also asked about Gauteng having the lion's share, and it's a problem. And it's a problem that we've drawn attention to many times. So if you look at Gauteng, just over 21,000 units that have been applied for in our Gauteng projects, 39 projects making up just over 21,000 units. So, and that's 21,000 units out of a total of 29,000. So only about 8,000 are in the other provinces and 21,000 are in Gauteng. And this is because these are where the applications are coming from. So, and that is the reason why we have, it's got nothing to do with the location of the SHRA office. But what we do need to be doing is going to each province and facilitating project applications, as we have tried to do in Limpopo, as we are going to be doing week after next in Northern Cape, and as we have done in Mpumalanga. Just on the Gauteng though, there is data that on Gauteng, most of the applications, the biggest number of applications in Gauteng are from the city of Tshwane, from Johannesburg, but specifically from Soweto in Johannesburg, that area of Johannesburg, and Greater Johannesburg. And then the fourth is Roodepoort, and then Chief Mokgale is the fifth. So, yeah, demand is very high in Gauteng. I can, though, give, if the member was asking, if Member Sitole, if you were asking about units really completed, we can give you the information on the units completed and where they all came from. Because obviously somewhere in Ekurhuleni, somewhere on the West Rand. And then you ask the question, what system do we have where there is no pipeline project? The system that we have is the one that I have presented here, in that we have the tool, we have the Social Housing Investment Plan. So we have a development department headed by one individual, and then in the structure that one individual has got four portfolio managers, of which two are currently in their jobs. The other two are busy being recruited. And those portfolio managers are each allocated an area. So there's somebody specifically responsible for the Free State and the Eastern Cape. And they use the ship as their agenda for their meetings with that particular province and that particular local authority to try to provoke project applications where there aren't project applications. When, though, a more strategic intervention is needed, that's when myself and members of the executive with the development team go to the province, as we've done in the cases I've already mentioned, and just try to coordinate the planning. But ultimately, I have to admit that it's up to the province to decide whether to approve a project, because we can never accredit a project if the province hasn't approved it and doesn't support it. And then, Chair, your questions. Yes, we've made a lot of very positive progress when it comes to transformation in the SHI sector. So on the latest count, by the end of the financial year, we had 70 conditionally accredited SHIs, and we had 13 fully accredited SHIs. When you see our fourth quarter report, you will see that we have collected all of the information on a range of different fields of information, so including the ownership, including who they've appointed as their main contractor, including who they've appointed as their professional team, and so we're tracking that information. We also are a long way in confirming their triple BEE ratings, and in fact the majority of the accredited institutions are what you would call transformed, because they aren't well-established SHIs. What though the challenge is, it's not, that is no longer where the challenge is. The challenge now is linking a project to that new SHI. And that's why the 70 conditionally accredited SHIs, their accreditation is for one more year. So we accredited them for 2 years, and within the 2 years we must link them to a project. We've had quite a high success rate in linking some to projects. So I make, for example, the two Western Cape projects by DCI, which are at the front. Their contracts are signed with us. Now it's up to the NHFC to process the loan applications for Goodwood and Haydervoort. Provicom, another one that we've just signed, also in the Western Cape, and we've got several in Gauteng, where we've approved projects in both Tshwane and Johannesburg. So I believe that when you see the data, you'll see that it's looking good, but it only counts when the projects are linked. On the budget, and I think the CSM must also weigh in on the budget, we spent, of the year that just ended, we spent 77%. Because you asked a very precise question, Chair, we spent 651, but what is our budget? Our budget was 851. So we didn't spend 95%, we spent 77%. On the retained surplus that had been carried forward, we did whittle it down from where it was historically down to 360 million. So we made inroads into depleting the retained surplus. The other important thing for the committee to know is that all of the money is committed, because we've got commitments on budget of 2.5 billion. But we rely on future years' allocations to fund some of those commitments. So we've got a 1.4 billion, which might be the 1.6 that you were referring to earlier. We've got a 1.4 billion. I don't want to call it a shortfall, but it will be paid for from future years' allocations. So the value of our contract that we've signed is 1.4 billion more then the money that we've thus far had up to this point that we would still have to get in the future to fund those commitments. And so when I refer to the fact that we are worried about certain line items on the budget of not being enough, I'm not by any means proposing to the committee that we're asking for more money. I'm saying that as we go forward with the increase in expenditure year on year, eventually we will need more, because we've been given, first of all, because in performance and rate of expenditure has been increasing, but second of all, because we've received some additional responsibilities. But on next year's budget, the 741, we're planning to spend the full 741 plus a portion of what was already retained. So we won't have a cash shortfall. I wasn't suggesting that we'd have a cash shortfall. All right, and then, Chair, your third question, how to assist provinces that do not have projects. I believe I addressed that in an earlier question. I think it was Member Situla's question, so I think I did cover that. Fourth question was, what are we doing to make sure that the PSCs work well? The good news is that only one of the nine ships that are presented, I only indicated in one of the cases that the PSC was absolutely not functioning, and that was the Northern Cape. So there's been a lot of improvement on the PSCs through the SHRA working with the provinces, and the other provinces' PSCs are functioning. There's room for improvement, how regularly they meet, etc., but the PSCs are now functioning, and we are much happier than we used to be. Answered on Gauteng, then is SHRA not working in all inner cities? Okay, on the inner city question, Chairperson, and the question about the building where there were deaths, the Johannesburg is only the most advanced for one simple reason, is that the implementation of the IP with the HDA has been worked on for 18 months, and we've spent 3 million rand identifying buildings, etc., etc. So it started first. But the one with Etiquini is also getting there. We were in Etiquini last week. Our sector development executive was there, meeting with the city of Etiquini and trying to coordinate between Etiquini as a city and the province of KZN. So that contract is also signed. Ekurhuleni's contract is also signed, and that's the focus on Kempton Park and Germiston. But they're just further behind Johannesburg because they started a bit later. And then you had two more questions. Oh yes, complaint from people evicted. Chair, you're referring to Howell Road, yeah. And we are down in the province on Saturday to deal with Howell Road. As a supplementary matter, we've had a rain. We've been working very closely with the National Rapid Response Task Team. But in the latest meeting, which was as late as Monday, where the chairperson of our council, together with myself and two members of the National Rapid Response Task Team, we did agree, though, that we can't do it piecemeal, because there was also Steen Villa's eviction here in Cape Town. And then there was the invasion of Umsunduzi's units, which is also very hot. So the main thing to try to manage there is the public perception that we are a cruel government that kicks people out on the street. And there are no easy answers to this, Chair, unfortunately, because with rental housing, ultimately, from time to time, there will be evictions. But we're doing the best we can to manage the fallout. Relationship with NHFC over the last number of months has really improved very, very significantly. And I think it's because the structure that we're using to coordinate our work is much more formal than it used to be. So instead of relying on the grant recipient to tell us where their loan application is, we have a structure where we meet with the NHFC directly and NHFC as an institution gives us the progress on loan approvals to us. Lawrence was giving me progress on DCR, yes, over lunch. So I think that was the question that you asked. Susan.
Thank you, CEO. Chairperson, I'm not going to comment on the implemented surplus. I will just talk to the consultancy. Chairperson, if you can look at the consultants, they actually are high in 2019 and then we reduce them. That was the plan, that the consultancy fees are quite high. But what the show is trying to do during the year is to establish a baseline on how best to carry out tenant audits, because it's the first time we do that. And subsequent to the report being presented to us, we will then put it into place, depending on the complexity and the nature of work that we need to carry out. Then we come up with a plan to reduce the consultancy.
Thank you very much, Shra. National Department, are you happy with the transformation pace of Shra? Is it meeting your standards and assisting you to meet your targets?
Do you want to put me on record?
I want to put you on record.
Chair, let me first indicate, Chair, I think it's just important to note that, and I'm not sure if Rory did address the issue, but the question of the accumulated surplus together with the RCG grant, I mean, that percentage, Rory, is what? Percent from including your, I mean, I... 650 of 1.2 or 1.4. I just need to, sorry, Chair, not that I want to take over the meeting.
No, but Chair, I like this. So it's 650 of 1 point something. But because what is that? It's 650 of 810.
No, there's 2 million. There's one, there's an 800 million, what's it, 800 million for this year, right? 17, 18. Yeah, 749 or whatever the case may be. And then there's an additional rollover or accumulated surplus which was then carried over. Now the thing is that what we said to the Shura, we're not happy about the fact that there's a substantial amount of, I'm not quite sure, I haven't checked what that figure is, but it's somewhere between 500 and 600, I might be wrong. Now the point about it is, Chair, is that we're not happy about that. Okay, so we can.
And
we
told them.
Well, we have, Chair, and I think the issue is that there are reasons and mitigations, and whether or not we accept and agree that, I'm not quite sure if we want. So that, I think it's important to note that we're not happy about that fact, because it's not only a reflection on Shra, it's a reflection on us that for the third year running we are going to have a retained surplus, or we're going to have to apply for a retained surplus. And the point about it is that we've raised this issue that National Treasury, in relation to the cuts that were experienced, looked at Shra and found Shra as a soft target because we weren't spending. So the fact of the matter is that, you know, we're not going to be able to meet our target. Now, whether or not we're not going to meet our target, we can blame the fact that we don't have a budget and we don't have enough money, but National Treasury is going to say to us, but you have not spent all your funding for the last 3 years. And I think that's the issue. So, and I'm not saying that that's a Shra issue that they have to deal with or they have to suffer. I think there's a consequence. I can take the... Didi is not here, so as the counting officer, I can accept responsibility on him, and then if he doesn't. But that's the issue, Chair, so that's the first issue. I mean, the second issue is that on the issue around the question of the social transformation, the overall developmental objectives we're achieving, I mean, I think that's it. The third issue, and I think we've raised this, is that, remember, in relation to the nurture contracted development program. And the question that we've asked the Shura is to tell us in the appointment of contractors what's the complexion in terms of women, youth, and so what's that percentage, and the jury's still out on that. So the problem is that the Shura construction costs are quite lucrative in terms of unit per square. You know, the unit costs are quite. In fact, we pay equivalent to what is in some of the high income areas. So it's a lucrative part, and the accusation that's been thrown against us by contractors, black contractors especially, is you give us the crumbs, and those are issues. So that's the sort of transformation. On the issue of the target, whether or not I think we had set the target for, was it 60%? We had set the target that all SHIs that receive funding in terms of the RCG must be 60% black owned. And I think that I'm not quite sure what the target has been, but it's the issue, Chair, and the last point which we need to be is, remember, these SHIs are for public benefit. They're not, I mean, we can, and this is the view that we have, is that they're for public benefit, and therefore they have to be able to disclose fully to us what their ownership is, where those surpluses are being invested, and those kind of things. And then the last part, Chair, is perhaps what we've indicated, and I think what we need to be very clear, is we've said to Shra that its responsibility is not only in relation to project management and project funding, but there's an important regulatory aspect. And that's an issue that I think we're still not very, very comfortable, because the regulatory aspect is about whether or not those tenants get abused, a whole range of things that are there. So I think what we said is that we've got to be able to do that. And the last part, Chair, is that I also don't want that to be sneaked in. I mean, the issue around the question of the changing of the structure is something that will have to go back to Minister, because the point about it is that we 2 years ago we changed the structure, and we're now changing it again. The problem with that is that we've just got to be very careful about how we manage it. The point that we've asked is, and I think we'll come back to you, is that where is this capacity going in? Is it going in on research? Is it going in on... Because if you're having problems with getting your units on the ground, then you should be getting project managers, technical, those kind of things. The issue is, well, where exactly is that capacity going? Because we've said, and it's not only a Shura issue, but you can't have the HDA. I mean, the HDA will come here tomorrow and tell you they've got this huge infrastructure for research and monitoring and evaluation. The department's got one. The NHSC's got one. The CSIS has got one. The NHBRC has got one. So we've duplicated capacity in relation to research. We've duplicated capacity in terms of monitoring and evaluation. So who's actually doing the work? But that's a collective issue, Chair, that we've got to address, and it's not a Shah specific issue, but we've got to be able to ensure that. Thanks, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Department. I think you've answered that up. I think CEO and Alice are right. We're quite happy with the responses and your presentation, but probably what we still need to do, and you need to explain to us, I think probably the question was not very clear. The issue of the percentage of the RCG grant that you have spent in the last financial year, so that we are able to understand, but it doesn't have to be responded here and now. But I think the main issue here that we're saying is that we still are not that happy. You know, we will never be 100% happy, but we still are not that happy with the transformation pace that is making one. There is progress, but you could do better than you are doing. And I'm sure you will do better. We're quite happy that you are taking the green field serving project, because there have been problems around that, and I'm sure they will be better managed now that they are under you. But we would love to see your footprint in all projects, both in the pipeline, in the current, even in the process of the restructuring zones. We know that's not necessarily you that deals with restructuring zones. It's those metros and those provinces together with departments. But I know that you are part of this. If you can assist, because that also assists in making sure that there's continuous work that is being done. So there's still a lot of work to be done. But otherwise, we are not happy that, of course, the bank, the lion's share is out there. You can explain it as much as you want and try and to justify it as much as you want, but 21,000 of 28,000 we can send one problem is a lot. But thank you very much, and we might have to call you back just to come back and so that we can deal specifically with the issue of transformation and progress. What we might, but for now, I think we're quite happy with the progress. Thank you so much. The officials from the department, it's going to be helping us a lot that entities, when they come here to present, and there are areas of concern that you are raising. Remember, it's not for them only. The department must take ownership of those areas that you are raising, because overall, whatever they do, if it's good, you shine. If it's bad, you are also part of the group that's going to be affected. So, see to it that whatever we have raised with this entity is corrected, because when they come back, they are coming back with you, so that you are able to know what is it that you have done to make sure that there is improvement. Thank you very much. Ahmed, I know you are listening with that ear of yours, and you're going to help us around the issue of police. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Tomorrow, we are not here.